Welcome back to Taboo. My name's Katrina. I'm in the studio today with two special guests. One, Lee from Tab. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, Lee Moran, a business development manager at Tab.
First debut podcast episode for him today. Welcome.
First of many, hopefully.
And our very special guest is from J3 Advisory. Would you like to introduce yourself, please?
Jack Bristow from J3 Advisory. One of the co-founders. Thank you very much for having me.
And we will go into the top five questions that are being asked on warranty, but do you want to give a little intro to J3 Advisory before we start?
Yeah, I think the best way to categorise us is a specialist insurance and development debt advisor.
Great. Well, we'll get things kick things off with question number one, which quite simply is, well, maybe it might not be so simply, but question number one, what is a building warranty?
So a building warranty is a first-party piece of insurance that covers new build development for structural damage, defects to walls, roofs and foundations. It's probably the cleanest definition, but it's particularly important for your developer because it enables their, as well as giving first-party insurance, it enables their exit strategy, be that to sell their units at the end or if they're going to refinance onto longer-term debt.
What does it cover? What does a building warranty cover?
So it's structural integrity. So for there to be a claim on a latent defects insurance policy, you need to have a defect that gives rise to a claim after practical completion. So the cover starts from when you get to practical completion for a 10-year period thereafter. And it needs to be a defect as a result of poor, something that is incorrect in the design stage, something to do with the workmanship, or the materials that we use being incorrectly applied. So that gives rise to the claim, and then if that impacts on structure, walls, roof, foundations, and then knock-on effects elsewhere, that is where you have a valid claim.
So what is a latent defect? Is that right?
A latent defect, so it's a claim that gives rise to a fault or a defect after practical completion. That's your.
So that's just the terminology they use?
Exactly, yeah.
Fine. And why is a building warranty important?
I think primarily if you were to speak to developers and ask them, they would say because we have to have it to be able to sell the units, or again, if they're going to refinance from development debt onto long-term debt, the lenders involved will insist that there's a warranty in place. I suppose take it a step further for when you or I are buying our first property or second property, if it's a new build or an investment property, the bank will say, Katrina, you're eligible for the loan. We're comfortable with that. You've got the income to satisfy it. You've obviously got the deposit amount. You're buying a new build property from Lee Holmes over there. But what we want to see from Lee is a copy of the warranty that's going to be in place. And if it's at practical completion now, we want to see a copy of the certificate that gives the lending bank on the mortgage complete comfort that there's structural integrity. The structural integrity of the building is protected. From their perspective, if they're lending £300,000 plus on a property over a 25-year term, they want to know if there's something fundamentally wrong with the structure that their investment is protected.
They don't want to get it to collapse.
Yeah, it's just effectively making sure that they've built it according to the regulations. And
correct.
It's a form of insurance to cover that.
Great. Well, how do I know if I've got it? Presumably I have.
Yeah, well, I hope you have. So if you're buying, I think from a consumer's perspective, if you're buying a new build unit, it will be one of the things, one of the checklist points for a developer. And it should be something, if you're working with a reputable developer, that they're actually, it improves their saleability of the unit. So it should be something that they're talking about. You know, when you're going into buying a new build unit, whether you're dealing through an agent or somebody directly at the developers, they'll be wanting to make you aware of who the warranty provider is so that you can make sure that it's accepted by the lender that's going to be providing your mortgage.
So some lenders might not accept some warranties.
Definitely. Right? I think as with all markets, there are good providers and some not so good providers. And I think that there's something that we'll probably cover later on, is that there's something of a checklist for developers and also for consumers so that they can make sure that the warranty in place is fit for purpose, and from a developer's perspective, making sure that they've got one that is going to enable their exit strategy, make sure they've got full access to the lending market.
Great. Any more questions? Question number one?
No, yeah, so that covers it really, as I say, why it's in place, why it's needed.
Yeah.
The lender needs to make sure that basically they don't want that building falling down or any structural problems within the first 10 years, which is important to have this information as a lending perspective, mm-hmm. just to know that as a developer that's going to build out, you always do the research to make sure they've got the relative experience, but you need to know that they've got the cover and the warranty in place after when lending on the term debt as well. So it's just another level added onto the development.
Yeah, I think for lenders as well, it's part of their profile in the developer. I think it speaks to credibility, mm-hmm. With regards to who are they proposing for the mm-hmm. warranty, yep. who have they worked with before, and also from the lender's perspective, it's risk mitigation, because it's a lesser skill, I would say, to get the money out the door for the lender.
Yep.
The skill is in getting it back through. So I think all lenders, especially going in the market we're in and going into at the moment, lenders are even more mindful than they have been about how's that money going to come mm-hmm. back. And obviously, if the strategy from the developer is to sell the units or is to refinance onto another provider for term debt, then they're going to want to make sure that the warranty is fit for purpose, because otherwise they're not going to be able to hit their ultimate goal, which is getting the money back in there.
That's the ultimate objective at the moment in the market, is how we're going to be paid back.
Well, question number two, ready? What types of different warranties can you get?
Lots. So there's a strong variation. I haven't got the list that you've got in front of me, but we can whiz through them. I think the first one starts with
new build warranty.
So a lot of these are variations on the same theme. So starting with your new build warranty is your clean cut new building coming out of the ground. That's your new build warranty, and they all run for the same term, apart from the social housing policy. Conversion warranty, and as with all of these things, you'll find as you go through different parts of the developments that you guys will be looking at, some insurers will have different appetites for different insurances. Mm-hmm. So everybody will offer a new build warranty, because that is the very core of what everyone does for new build properties. They're fairly clean cut. Conversion warranties offer another layer of complexity, because you've got an existing structure that's been there before. So there are less insurers that will look to cover that risk, and that'll be because there is an inherent risk in that existing structure that they can't see the foundations when they went in on a building that was built in 1920.
Yeah.
So their concern is, well, we're taking on, you guys are going to go and you've got contract works for a certain value, but if there's a latent defect in those works, and that has an impact, consequential loss on the existing mm-hmm. structure, the insurer essentially is on the hook for that as well. So yeah. as a result, there'll be A, less insurers that will want to cover conversions, and secondly, those that do, there'll be a slight loading on the premium, and the developer will be charged slightly more for the privilege. So again, I think that's useful from a lender's perspective, because they need to be allowing for that in the budget and in their forecast when they're looking at it. If they're a bit light on the warranty, that's often mm-hmm. one of the reasons on conversions. Commercial latent defects is your offices, retail space and warehouses. I would say that offices and warehouses are probably make up 80% of that commercial space. It does now also include the built-to-rent market, which is yeah. booming at the moment, but there are some crossovers there with residential, because there's a few variations on how that policy can be put in place. But I think on the commercial side, we've seen a big increase on PBSA, senior living, purpose-built student accommodation, where it's being driven by the lenders or the forward funders that are saying, actually, if we're taking a long-term position on this, we want to make sure that the structural integrity of the building is protected, and this is about income for us over yeah. the mid to long term, so we want to make sure mm-hmm. That we've got cover in place, rather than just relying on a collateral warranty, which at year seven would probably give whoever's owning the building at that time some concerns. And the other point you have on commercial latent defects is it's disappeared from my head.
We can come back to it.
And then on social housing, this policy it changes slightly, because you get it for 12 years. So where you look yeah. at the larger schemes where you've got some private sale and some social housing, as long as they're in separate blocks, you'll see policies for 10 years on the private and 12 years on the social, if there's a mixture.
Why is there a difference?
So for the social housing provider, they want to see that there's 10 years. They are taking a long-term position mm-hmm. on that property and on that asset. So they want to actually get the full 10 years cover, rather than having 2 years defects period, where the builder developer has the liability period. and then a further 8, they want the full 10.
Oh, okay. So the way that kind of a 10-year warranty is actually, sorry, so the first 2 years are the fault's down to the builder, and then after that it goes to the insurer.
Yeah, by the insurer, yeah. And I think that it's a good thing to have, because it ensures that the developer and builder are committed, as I'm sure they are anyway, but it makes sure that they're committed to building and delivering a good quality product. It gives the consumer, the bank, the lender, peace of mind that everybody that's involved in the process is pulling towards a common goal. So that's what the idea is.
We're not going to get a builder build something and go, right, that's complete, it's off my hands, not my problem anymore.
And off he goes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They need to be held accountable.
And then receivership warranties is probably something that we are anticipating to see more of, and we've seen quite a few recently. excuse me, where a developer's fallen into financial difficulty, a lender's stepped in, or there's a sale in place, and a receiver's looking to find a new developer to take over the scheme, complete it and finish it.
So who would get that? So the receiver would then take out that warranty at the point of stepping in? At what point do they...
The receiver or the lender, you quite often find, will make the soft inquiries and just establish whether a warranty can be sought and found and put in place, and they'll do some sense checking and find out who has the appetite for it, what will the cost be, and then that goes as part of their sale pack if they then look to sell on to another developer. Obviously, if a lender's going to step in and complete, then the lender's looking at it going, okay, we're really the only people with enough skin in the game here.
Yeah.
We're going to have to take on the liability period and then build that in as part of our JCT, which with our contractor comes in to finish it.
I have to have my questions back.
Yep.
What was my last one? Oh, yeah, what do they all mean? But we've covered that. So, yeah, how would I know what kind of warranty I would need? Is it, well, would I ever, if I'm buying a property and I needed to get building warranty, how would I know which one to go for?
So as a consumer, it's not overly your concern. You want to make sure that there is one in place. The responsibility resides with the developer. It'll be something that, you know, Lee would say, it'll be something that TAB would insist on before they're going to put money out the door on a scheme, whether they're funding at a not started stage or if they're involved in something a bit more interesting that's part complete. So I think it's one of the points that's on a checklist, and we spend a lot of time talking to lenders, lawyers, various other associated professionals, sort of giving the best advice on not only which policy is right, but what provider's right based on the dynamics of who the developer is, the rest of the construction and professional team, and also what the overall strategy is with the asset once it's complete, if it's to be sold or refinanced, like we talked about.
So as a consumer, the warranty that's in place is going to be the best for me, and because that's...
Well, I think probably when you're looking at it as a consumer, you're looking at a checklist as, does my lender accept this, and what's the cover that's included. Now the reality is that cover isn't going to change if there's something that you're not happy with, but if probably for you, it speaks to credibility for a consumer if they're looking at something and they get in their lending from HSBC and they approach the bank and say, oh, I'm looking to buy this. This is the level of funding I'm going to require. This is what I need on the mortgage. Here's my deposit. Here's my income. If they then put forward a warranty and HSBC turn around and say, no, we don't accept that warranty, I think from a purchasing decision for the consumer, they're going to say, actually, I've lost confidence in the developer a little bit there. And at that point, you're at a juncture where it's either... So I've now got to go and find another lender that will accept this warranty.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Well, how do I feel about that? Mm-hmm. And also, what do I feel about the developer that they've built something that HSBC, for whatever reason, aren't going to support the warranty that's in place? I think from a developer's perspective, it's quite often viewed as a necessary evil. But again, I think it is about protection from a structural integrity point of view, but it's also about enablement for their exit. And quite often what you find, as with all markets, there are some providers that focus on price, and those ones quite often are the ones that cause the concerns that come further down the line. You normally find that the well-respected providers, you can, you know, throw a net over their pricing of sort of 5 to 7% on a reasonably big ticket piece of insurance, and then you'll have somebody that is 25% cheaper than that, and you think, well, actually the alarm bell is on the one that's 25% cheaper over here. The rest of the market is playing in this sphere.
So as a developer, let's say I'm going to be building a new block of flats tomorrow. Yes. Very exciting stuff.
Mm. On Saturday as well.
And how would I... So I am a new developer. Mm. Where would I go to get a building warranty? What, or is that just kind of something developers...
I think a bit like funding, developers have their process, and you quite often find that the developer knows best, to the ones that I speak to at least, so they're very quick to tell me that they know best. So
it's a good job I'm not actually building a property tomorrow, because I don't think I'd get them sold.
By the end of this, you'll know where to get the warranty from, so we'll be fine. But I think they have a tried and tested process, and quite often we'll find with experienced developers, it's very much a if it's not broke, don't fix it mentality, which I think is okay to a point, but to improve on that, I think you have to look at what the market's doing and how appetite changes insurer to insurer, and who ultimately is sitting behind those insurers and what that means. And just because somebody was expensive or not very good 5 years ago doesn't mean that that's the case now, and vice versa. So I think something that we put out fairly often is something of a warranty checklist for developers, so that they can go through and say, right, okay, let's set this as, these are my parameters for purchasing a warranty. Let's make sure that we've got an A-rated underwriter that sits behind it, that the full level of indemnity is being supported, so that the contract value is being supported by the level of insurance that I'm getting, so there's not a gap between the two. Mm-hmm. Making sure that we've got full access to the lending market, as we've talked about a lot, and that supports the exit strategy at the end. I think that one of the big sticking points for developers is what that inspection process looks like, and how is that working. And a lot of them are quite now attuned to having the building control and the warranty inspections combined, so they've only got to satisfy one surveyor on site in theory. I think there are big pros to that. There are economies of scale that work to make the inspections slightly cheaper, but it doesn't move the needle hugely. But I think there are some upsides to keeping them independent as well. And then the other point is always making sure that your insurer, and much like the developer, is constantly being asked for, you know, for their track record, and have you built, bought and sold things that are of equivalent size and scale to what you're looking to do next. I think they should be asking that of their insurer, especially where it's quite a vibrant market, where there's lots of people professing to be able to provide the right warranty to various types of developers. I think the developers should be stress testing the insurance provider and saying, okay, so I'm building this block of flats in this area, and they're going to be this size, the GDV is going to be so on and so forth. What have you done that's comparable? Because I think in a lot of instances, there are some very experienced developers that maybe don't get good advice when it comes to structural warranties. And they end up at, so they go from one end of the market at the top, which maybe isn't quite right for the projects they're doing, but they're working with one of the bigger providers who don't necessarily have the perfect appetite. They don't get the right advice, and they end up at the basement end of the market. And I think that it's strange how many times you see that somebody says, oh, I've been with NHBC for 25 years and then I've gone to provider X, and that's where sort of the alarm bell goes, oh, how did you end up from there to there? And you say, oh, well, these guys rang me and told me they could do it. Oh, okay. How's that working out for you? I can't sell any of the units. Oh.
See, that's where, as a developer, going to someone like yourself, a specialist in this market, that adds value to the deal. Yeah. And it assists them in getting to that process, the same as you would go to when you're looking at what lender's going to look at the deal. They would do their research with a broker for the lender, seeing what they're good at, what they've done in the past, and that's the same for warranties.
Yeah, definitely. I think that actually it's easier for us to work with the more experienced developer, because I think they actually see the value, because they've been doing it for 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years. And they say, they might have worked with a variety of different providers in that space and have had a varying different experience with all of them. And actually to be able to give them live updates on how build zone are performing at the moment, what Premier's appetite is at the moment, how quick ICW are getting their certs out. I think that all of those sorts of things are actually what a developer wants to know, because they know what their pain points are and they're quick to talk about them. So I think if you can say, well, actually, I hear that a lot, or I think that was probably the case 3 to 5 years ago, but actually now what they've done is they've changed, and this is how it works. So I think on the next scheme, they might be a good fit for you. And I think those soft facts and that market intel is more useful. The newer developer is quite often on these things driven by price and wants to do everything because they've got all this energy and they're excited. I think the more experienced developer is kind of looking at it and going, okay, actually the value of opinion and experience is important to me, and that's really where we find the value is seen most by the development market.
Great. I've realised my next question might not be, well, I'm going to go into it, because when I was sort of looking at them all, I was like, what's the difference between home insurance and home warranty?
Your home insurance is what you buy when you buy a house, right? And everything's covered from fire, flood, loss, damage, as it goes, and you renew it on a yearly basis. your warranty is something that the developer puts in place, hopefully pre-construction, but certainly before practical completion. And that covers the structural integrity of the building for 10 years. It gives you as the consumer peace of mind. If there is a major defect that gives rise to a claim, that it's going to be covered, it will pay out first and ask questions after.
So it could be that home insurance I'm buying, home warranty developer is already in place, like is buying and it's already in place.
So the warranty, if you're buying a new build property, the warranty will already be in place,
yeah.
Or you won't be able to complete on that transaction. The home insurance, more often than not, is obviously your responsibility as the homeowner. But when you buy the property from the developer, the warranty will be transferred into your name. And then if you can sell that property onto Lee in 5 years' time, part of that transaction through the property solicitors will be, oh, we had a warranty from ICW. We then transfer that warranty into Lee's name. And then if Lee sells it again within the 10-year period, it'll be transferred into the new owner's name,
yeah.
So on and so forth.
And then I was just looking at kind of other comparisons. And what is the difference between structural warranty and building warranty?
Okay, so structural warranty and building warranty, pretty much identical. Where you have the big difference is the difference between a latent defect insurance policy and a building warranty. What you normally find is a building warranty will typically have a defects period, the liability period that we talked about, where the developer builder has the responsibility from practical completion to month 24.
Yep.
As well with a latent defects policy, you'd normally find that there's a no defects period on that, and or you'd be buying it direct from the insurer. So it's without getting too technical, if you were doing a commercial warranty, so let's say you were building some office an office block in London, a new build office block in London, and your funder said, actually we want, or you were retaining it as a developer, so actually we want a structural warranty in place because this is about income for us over the mid to long term, you get a commercial warranty in place, you're more likely to get that through an intermediary, but through someone like Aviva, who would also be the underwriter on the scheme, as where if you go to a ICW, a Build Zone, a Protec, a Premier Guarantee, they arrange the policy, they're the scheme administrator, but it's about the underwriter that sits behind them. We talk about A-rated capacity. Yeah. So a Build Zone, you're talking about Fidelis, ICW, you're talking about Accelerant, those guys that sit behind them. So the difference really is between a building warranty and LDI, latent defects insurance, rather than building warranties and structural warranties.
There you go. You knew.
I did.
We know now.
Yeah, we all know.
our listeners know now too. Moving on to question number 4. How can I get a building warranty? Let's ask this from the position of a developer, because as obviously we've figured out, I don't need one. So question number 4, how can I get a building warranty?
A few ways. It's an interesting part of the insurance market, because it's one of those situations where you can approach the providers directly, or you can also do it through an intermediary, advisor, broker. So those are your routes. I do have a preference on it, yeah, but also I think that sometimes though for some developers it does make sense, and also that's quite often that experienced developer that's got the relationships. But I think that for a lot of the SME market, they run with very lean leadership teams. So you normally find that, not always to be too generalising, but I think that you quite often get in that SME leadership team, you've got somebody who's got a really strong construction background, somebody with a good funding background, they've come together, they've set developers up, and so maybe somebody that's got very good land experience as well, if there's a trio of them. And what normally happens with the insurance is it gets passed between the three of them. So, I'll do this one, you do the next one. Because no one particularly enjoys it. And, you know, they work with a Build Zone, a Protec, an ICW. And I think that those are the guys that really benefit from having an advisor, a broker on board, because it just acts much like a funding advisor.
Yeah.
It just acts as an extension of that business. And I think that that's the way that it really should work. And also, I think always the problem that you have as a developer is if you were to sit all of the insurers in a room and say, I've got my new build block of flats, I've got a commercial building that I'm doing in London, which is going to be flats, and I'm doing a pub conversion in North London somewhere. And you say, who's best for each property that I'm doing and that I'm going to be developing? And you say, well, who's best for the pub conversion? All the hands would go up. And then the same thing for the commercial unit and doing the offices. Who's the best one? They all put their hands up. And then the same for the block of flats. They just can't all be telling the truth in the nicest possible way, but equally they can only sell you what they've got to sell you, so they can't all have that broad of an appetite. So that's where I think the value in an advisor comes in to be able to say, okay, yeah, look, they're all good providers, but for what you're doing, for who you are, how you operate and what your exit strategy is going to be, we can go to all corners of the market, but we're just going to go to the right ones for you. Yeah. That's going to save everyone time, which really is the, you know, the finite resource, and we can work it out from there. So I think that's probably the best way of explaining it. They can go to all of the providers if they want and fill out all of their 14 page forms, but it's probably best if they find the right advisor to do it for them and give them some good advice and save them some time and deliver that peace of mind that you look for when you buy insurance.
And what factors, well, I guess, what factors should I consider when searching for building warranty? But I guess...
Yeah, it's that warranty checklist that we... Yeah, it's the warranty checklist that we talked about before. So it's the capacity that sits behind it. It's the level of indemnity. It's the access to the lending market. And it's having a, you know, demonstrated track record from that insurer that they've completed on similar schemes and done a good job there. So all of the things that you... All the advice you'd get from a good advisor. But I think that checklist for a developer, if they've got that, and they go through the process themselves, and they say, oh, I didn't really enjoy that because it was super time-consuming. Mm-hmm. I think I know what I'm looking for, so I can go to any broker, and actually that's my checklist that I'm mm-hmm. running them against, so we can find out whether they can deliver what I'm looking for. I think having that checklist for any developer is a key starting point, whether your strategy is going to be to do it direct or find the right advisor.
And when you said earlier, you were saying how we should ask the insurer for examples and case studies and stuff. Are you looking for them to show you times where they've actually had to pay out because there's been a defect or something?
I think claims, how they handle claims is certainly part of it, because that ties into the developer's reputation. But I think much like when you talk to anybody with a specialism and you have a conversation around, okay, so what have you done previously that looks similar to this? Mm-hmm. How have you worked with people like me and businesses of my size before? Very quickly you get a sense of whether that person is going to be capable of doing the job. I think that the way that everybody builds credibility is by the questions they ask. And I think a developer should be no different. You quite often find when you're the developer, the spotlight is on you mm-hmm. and the questions are being asked of you, you know, to build that credibility and say, well, I've built this, I've bought that, I've sold that, and I've done this and I've looked after people and these are the people that have bought from me before and they've been happy. But actually I think it comes the other way around in this scenario as well, where they need to look under the hood of the insurance partner that they're going to pick, or the advisor that they're going to pick, and say, okay, so how have you done it? But, you know, who it is, you know, everyone likes to talk about the nice deals they've done before, but actually, what did you do when it was a little bit tough? How did this work on site? You know, when there were regulation changes halfway through, how are we going to navigate that? Do we do it together? Do you just have a big stick that you beat me with? What's the process? How do we approach these things? And I think that very quickly you start to build a picture as to whether that's the type of business and insurer that you want to be working with. I think that's where everyone earns their stripes, is actually when you're in the thick of battle. I think that, especially in this part of the market, you know, development is a contact sport, and on that basis, your insurance and your funding partners should be equipped for that, and they should be willing to stand alongside you rather than, you know, sell your policy mm-hmm. and then move on to the next one.
Would there be any circumstances where the time period changes? So we look for a 10-year as standard, 12-year on social housing. Would there be any sort of scenario where property type, borrower, location, that might be different, either shorter or longer?
No, so at the minute, 10 and 12 years is the standard. There have been some people who got very excited by, there was a government paper that was written that suggested extending the warranty to 15 years, which I think it actually was back in the very early 90s, and then it changed to 10 and 12 social housing. So there has been muted conversation about that, but the government, just for a change, changed their mind on that item as well. So, but with regards, it doesn't discriminate by location or asset class with regards to the time period, just the social housing with the 12 years.
If I said I want it for 20, is there people who would do that, or is it?
I mean, I think it would be people that would like to do it and write a premium for it on a pro rata basis. But no, we have had developers before that have said, "Oh, we would like to offer a 12-year policy, even though we're only doing it for it's for private sale. We just see it as a value add for our clients." But the insurer is quite rightly are hesitant to do that. It is for social housing policies, and for a good reason.
Cool. Question number five, final question. Is building warranty regulated?
It is, by the FCA, in the main. So all of the insurance brokers that you will be working with, or you should be working with, will be regulated by the FCA, as well as will all of the providers. So your Buildzones, ICW, mm-hmm. so on and so forth, will all be regulated. And I think, again, that's one of the key checkpoints as well, is making sure with regards to that the underwriter has been stress tested by one of the UK's rating agencies, and also that everybody is regulated and compliant and has a clean bill of health on that side of things.
Is it a legal requirement?
It's not a legal requirement to have a warranty in the same way as it is with building control, but you can't do much without it. So whilst it isn't a legal requirement, and some people will say that it is, it's not. It's absolutely something that it is a need to have, and that's the way that we always look at it. The question isn't whether the developer is going to buy the warranty or not on residential development. It's just about, are they going to do it with provider A or provider B? So it's not a legal requirement, but you're going to have your hands tied behind your back if you haven't got it.
Do you think it might in the future become a legal requirement? Is that the way it might be heading?
I don't really see the need for it to change, to be honest. I don't think it would change the dynamic at all, because everybody knows that they need to get it. The only thing that it might do, you have with light touch refurbishments and some completed developments that maybe don't have a warranty for whatever reason, they'll explore things like architect certificates and professional consultant certificates, which are exactly that. They're a certificate that says that this project has been monitored to a certain standard. It doesn't offer an insurance-backed policy behind it. So I suppose the only real reason for making it a legal requirement is to eliminate that side of it. But I think that the PCCs and the architects certificates have their place in the market anyway. So I think I don't see that changing anytime soon.
And final question, you've mentioned a few kind of firms about who provides the building warranties. Do they tend to be big insurance firms that apply that kind of, well... I'll let you answer the question. Who provides building warranties?
So specialist insurance companies is the short answer. So I've talked about ICW, Buildzone, Protect, Premier Guarantee, Thomas Miller, who were formerly BLP, and you've got NHBC, I suppose, is sort of the name that everybody recognised from yesteryear. And I think that the question is, but there are a number of new providers that have come into the space. And I think that's where the question should come about, who's the underwriter that sits behind these guys. And again, that speaks to the checklist and the warranty checklist that we've talked about.
And these firms that provide the warranty, the insurers, do they provide other? Can some provide other insurance policies that you might want to use as well?
So some of them will provide complementary insurance products, CAR, site insurance, so on and so forth, but in the main they focus on their core work. They may do some other ancillary products. Some are starting to do IBGs, which they'll offer as an add-on, because insurance back guarantee. So for your flat roof and for your waterproof tanking. So in those instances, you may see them fan out their product range slightly more, but I don't think we're going to see those guys move into legal indemnities or rights of light anytime soon. I think they'll focus on their specialism and their core. Certainly for the time being.
Cool. Well, that's all the questions I've got. You got any more, Lee?
No, we've covered everything off really. Yeah, it was just more, it's a good education process to sort of understand it more in detail, and what the developer, lender, advisor are all looking for, to sort of put everything together to make sure it works in the long process and that the consumer is covered in the long run.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think that the one of the key things is understanding that what are the developer's objectives and how they talk, and taking that and packaging that and framing it and delivering it to the underwriter is probably the most important skill of all of it. And I think that that's where the value of who you're working with sort of comes into play most. I think there's quite a lot of nuances and questions that come through, but actually it's how you navigate those and who you do it with is probably the thing that will determine how quickly you get to where you want to be.
Well, thank you both for joining me. I hope you've enjoyed it. Where can we find you, Jack?
J3advisory.co.uk is our website, and our ops director, Rosita, has us all over LinkedIn and Instagram a lot of the time.
You'll be tagged later today.
We'll be well found, yeah.
Thank you, Lee, as well. I hope you've enjoyed your first podcast.
First podcast, yep, under the belt.
Handled the lights, that's for sure. And thanks to all of our listeners. I hope you enjoyed it. That was Building Warranty by Jack Bristow from J3 Advisory. That's all. See you next time. Bye.